Welcome to the world of Aeora, a news and lore podcast about the Pillars of Eternity games, as well as Obsidian Entertainment's upcoming release, Avowed. Hello and welcome to another episode of the World of Aeora. I'm your host, Eric, aka Gingerino. Thanks everybody for joining me as we dive into the history, lore, and game mechanics of Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 as we gear up for the release of Avowed. And I suppose now as well, we're diving into different gameplay trailers and stuff about Avowed for lore as well, seeing as how you're getting closer and closer to actual launch. For those new to the show, welcome to the show. Happy to have you here. This is a podcast that mainly aims to look at the lore for the world of Avowed and Pillars of Eternity called Aeora. Recently, we've had a lot of news and a lot of information come out about Avowed, so these recent episodes have been more geared towards that. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the setting for Avowed called the Living Lands, which is a location within this fantasy world called Aeora that Obsidian made for Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2. We've never been to the Living Lands before until Avowed comes out. This will be the first foray into that, but that doesn't mean that we don't have lore about Avowed to talk about, and that's what we're going to go over in today's episode. We're going to be going over the things that we know, what the Living Lands is like, what makes it an interesting place to play a game, and some of the histories and peoples and unique sights that we might see when we're there. Not a lot of news to go over today. I didn't really cover a lot of stuff last week about the stuff we learned from the Creature Cast podcast, which had Carrie Patel and Gabe Paramo, and they talked more detail about the world of the Living Lands and Avowed and some stuff there. That's where we learned that romancing companions was not possible. That's where we learned about, I think, the importance of companions, really. So if you want to check out some more information, go ahead, check out Creature Cast. It's mostly been covered by stuff that we've talked about in previous episodes, as well as on Avowedcast. So if you're interested in more of that, go ahead and check that out. I thought they were supposed to be on a podcast called Dropped Frames, but I haven't seen an episode of that release yet, so I don't know what's going on there. As for news about the show, you might notice a new link within the show description. I'm not going to talk about it a lot here because I don't want to, you know, beat it to death, but I thought I'd let you guys know. I'll talk more about it at the end of the episode, so if you're interested in hearing the rationale as to why this exists, then feel free. But for those of you who have been listening to my show for a few years, this show has been going on for, I guess, 3 years at this point. But I've been recently talking about possibly doing ads or something on the show, and I've been getting feedback from a lot of you, and one of the friends of the show actually recommend that I check out this place called Ko-fi, is how I'm pronouncing it, K-O-F-I. And it's kind of like Patreon, but with a lot less commitment on both ends, I would say. And so I've decided to set up an account because I've had a couple of people ask, like, hey, can I support the show in some way? I'd like to do that. And I've always been kind of like, it's not my thing, you know? I don't want people to have to pay for it. Like, I'll just keep doing it for free. But I've recently been convinced by a couple people that some people really value that, being able to express that gratitude in some way. And so I've decided to set up that account. So there's a link in the description of today's episode to my Ko-fi account, which is ko-fi.com/worldofaeora. That's ko-fi.com/worldofaeora. If you feel like you want to pitch in $5 or something, go ahead. But let me make this perfectly clear at the offset. If you are perfectly content just listening to the show and not donating anything, by all means, just continue to do so. I will not be offended. I am not keeping track. In fact, I'm going to have an alarm on my phone just to remember to check in on this kind of stuff, because it's really, I'm just doing this for the passion of it. I like making podcasts. I like the world of Aeora. I'm really into the Avowed community and the Pillars of Eternity community. So that's why I'm doing this. I'm not here to make any money. Today we're talking about the Living Lands. Let's dive into it.
I'm curious. What exactly did you find there?
What is the Living Lands as a setting? Well, before we dive into the lore, I'll give you a quick little overview. Living Lands is a frontier location within the world of Aeora. And what I mean by that is that it's one of the regions in this world that is vastly unexplored, or at the very least, it's not settled and civilized in the way that other places within the world are. You can kind of split up the regions of this world into a few different categories. You'll have the Old Empires, which is Aedir, Rawatai, and Old Velia. You've heard me talk about them on previous episodes. These are the political superpowers that have existed for over a century at the very least within this world and have been growing in power and technology and exploring the world at large. They have their own continents that they're from, their own lands that they hail from, and those lands are relatively settled and explored as a result, except for Grand Velia, which is now a collapsed civilization. Then you have, of course, the newer worlds, right? So you can think of them as New World empires, as these like new nations that are coming out. And these are all found within the Eastern Reach continent. That's in the first Pillars of Eternity game that you play in one of these colonial areas called the Deerwood. But not far south from the Deerwood, the setting for the first Pillars game, is the Valian Republics, which was a set of city-state confederacies that came out of Grand Valia, which, of course, as I've mentioned, is now gone. And you have these are relatively settled and civilized and, you know, societal areas. They're places that people have settled down and started building a life in that are kind of known on a global scale. But then you have these other locations in the world that are considered frontier lands. They are lands that are very dangerous to live in, or very harsh to live in, or very distant from one of these other superpowers within the world and their nexus, you know. So we have the White That Wends, which is essentially like this world's version of Antarctica, except people live there, specifically the Pale Elves of this world. Then you have the Deadfire Archipelago, which is the setting for the second Pillars of Eternity game, and that's just a smattering of islands kind of to the south and east of the Eastern Reach continent, where the Deerwood is, which is the setting for the first Pillars of Eternity game. And so you have that there, which is teeming with deadly life and a native group of peoples called the Huana, which are like a set of Amauans, which is the kind of people that we see in the Avowed trailers that we had recently, like the 25-minute one. The NPCs that we talk to with the weird skin that look like scales, those are Amauan people, and the Huana is just a certain culture of that. And the Living Lands is the last of those three frontiers. We have the White That Wends, the Deadfire Archipelago, and the Living Lands. The Living Lands is an area north of the Aedir continent, and it's a relatively unexplored area. It's not something that we know a lot about, although, as we can tell from the interviews with Kerry Patel and Gabe Paramo, as well as just the gameplay footage, that clearly people have been living here for a while. It's just not a place that one of these empires are coming out of, if that makes any sense. The Living Lands is interesting in that it has a lot of varied biomes within the lore that we see anyways. When we read about the Living Lands, you go from one valley to the next, and it can go from a like lush jungle region to a sudden desert wasteland. And so you have this varied biome kind of a thing for the Living Lands. And there's all sorts of unique creatures and plants that are in the Living Lands, and there's ancient magic and things like that. So it's a place of ancient secrets. It's a place of vast types of flora and fauna. It is a dangerous place to explore. It is a wonderful place to set a game. And so we're going to dive into the lore today for what that is. So that's just kind of a brief overview of how I understand the Living Lands just off the top of my head. But for a more official reading, let's turn to the Pillars of Eternity guidebook, which has this to say about the Living Lands. The Living Lands are a large mountainous island far to the north of the Aedirin Empire, and is a diversely populated, meteorologically variable region. Most permanent dwellers settle in the southern mountain ranges, where the valley basins offer unique opportunities for farming and exploration. The Living Lands get their name from the fertility of soil and abundant growth of strange plants and animals in the seemingly endless valleys that span the island's interior. Eccentric locals boast that they come from the place where anything grows. Less is known about the isolated settlements to the cold north, where the eccentricity is rumored to go further than normal. And so that's all we have. That's one paragraph. So in the official guidebook printed for the first Pillars of Eternity game, which has all the lore for the world at that point in time, it's this one paragraph. But in this one paragraph, we get quite a lot. Living Lands is a large island, and it's to the north of the Aedirin Empire. So it's not too much of a sail for your envoy from the Game of Avowed to get there. Although, apparently, we haven't been there before since in that game. It is very mountainous. Now, the mountainous part is important, I think, as well for the varied valleys of biomes that we're going to talk about. It says it's diversely populated, which means we're going to see all sorts of Kith people there. And Kith, K-I-T-H, is the word that is used for the civilized races of this world, which would be humans, dwarves, elves, Amauans, Orlans, and godlikes. Those are the Kith races of this world. It is a diversely populated region, which means you're going to see all sorts of Kith there, and you're probably going to see all sorts of creatures and plant life as well, a varied amount of them. And it includes this word meteorologically variable as well, which means the weather is going to be crazy. And I think way, way back a few years ago when there was some information that was apparently leaked about Avowed, I guess weather was supposed to really play into it. And when you watch the video from June of last year, the gameplay trailer, There seems to be some sort of weather system there, although that could have just been for the sake of the video. It does seem that since it was captured in-game footage, that weather is going to play a point in there, which is good, because the Living Lands has extreme weather and extreme denizens, and everything about it is extreme, which makes it great for a game. And most permanent dwellers settle in the southern mountain ranges. Now, I can't recall for sure, but I'm pretty sure at one point in one of the interviews with Carrie Patel, she mentions something a lot about the southern coast, which makes sense, right? If you're coming from the Aedir Empire and the Living Lands is north of you, you would land on the southern coast. So it sounds like that's where the most stable part of the Living Lands are, is where we're starting out. And as we go further and further into the interior of this massive mountainous island, we're going to be seeing more eccentricities, not just in the land itself, but within the locals as well, and probably the metaphysics and the secrets that are there. The Living Lands gets their name from the fertility of soil and the abundant growth of strange plants and animals in the seemingly endless valleys. And so that's one of the important aspects that we've brought up about the Living Lands, is that it has these seemingly endless valleys. And the reason that's important as well is because, as we'll learn from another source from Pillars of Eternity, that each one of these valleys can have a different kind of biome and environment to it, which makes it drastically different to explore, right? You can, if you're preparing for a trek across the Living Lands, you kind of have to prepare to basically cross an entire globe's worth of biomes, it seems like. So I don't know how you prepare for something like that, which would make it all the more difficult to explore this kind of land. That's probably why it's a frontier land and not something that's more settled. But as we'll learn from a couple sources coming up, there's all sorts of strange plant and animal life throughout there. And this is the only mention where we talk about the eccentric locals further in the interior of this island. To corroborate everything we said further, if you went over to the strategy guide for Pillars of Eternity, which is a gameplay guide through the entire game, we get that one little paragraph about the Living Lands early in the book and describes it as a frontier island in the far north. A land of wild weather, strange beasts, and hundreds of difficult-to-reach valleys containing oddities never before seen by mortals. The racial mix in the area is extremely diverse, but not necessarily harmonious. Dwarves, propelled by their desire to explore, are very common here, even among the mix. And so in this second official source, this is actually like printed out in an actual book, we see a lot of the same things repeated, and those are going to tell you the things that are important about the Living Lands as a setting. Frontier island, far to the north. Wild weather, strange beasts, hundreds of difficult-to-reach valleys. Now, obviously, in this game, you can only have so many biomes that you make for the sake of a game, so I don't know how many valleys we're going to be able to explore, maybe not hundreds of them, but probably at the very least several, or maybe perhaps between valleys is like kind of the traveling stuff. That's where the parts of the game that isn't developed. But this is the kind of thing that we can look forward to with the Living Lands. But that last part is the thing that really piques my interest, the oddities never before seen by mortals. And that's this, the idea here, that there's a lot in the Living Lands that people don't know about, that there's ancient secrets to be found, and ancient cities, and technology, and lore, and knowledge. And that's also kind of backed up from the interviews with Carrie Patel and Gabe, talking about that these secrets that your character is going to unlock as you go through the narrative of the Game of Avowed. To learn a little bit more about the Living Lands and the plant and animal life that we can encounter there, we're going to read a source from the Pillars of Eternity game itself. This is an in-game book called True Stories from the Living Lands. It's a book from the first Pillars of Eternity game. And in this book, we have the writings of presumably an explorer of the Living Lands, and they write about their experiences and some of the things that they've seen within the Living Lands. And so we're going to read through this here and kind of dissect the lore as we go through. Only the hardiest of explorers would dare take the long, dangerous trek to the Living Lands. While there is no denying its beauty, the diversity of plant life alone is an herbologist's dream, the inherent risk in blithely trekking through these pristine hills is more than most should undertake. Let me take a moment to tell you about the land itself. Rolling hills, greenery, and sun. The whole area feels like a succession of hills and valleys, each with its own ecosystem. While that declaration is a tad extreme, it can almost be said to be true. The combination of sun, geographical location, proximity to fresh water, valley depth, and the existence of hot springs have given the Living Lands a wide breadth of flora and fauna. Walk down a hillside into a valley, and you will find lush, verdant hills. Climb the next rise, and you might see nothing but rock and boiling mineral springs. And the creatures. In my travels, I've seen it all, and this place never ceases to amaze me. So in this first section of this book here, we have this explorer talking about what the Living Lands is like, kind of like at an overview. And they talk about rolling hills, greenery, and a lot of beauty, but also inherent risk and danger. It seems like when you go from over one hill into another valley that you can go into another area with its own ecosystem, which he just says is a tad extreme to say, but it's kind of like that. And so we have these vastly different ecosystems from one area to the next. And as a result of all these different things, sun, geographical location, proximity to fresh water, hot springs, there is this wide variety of flora and fauna, which is why we should be able to expect to see a lot of different monsters, creatures, and weird plants as well, which we're going to get into. The rest of this book is split into three different parts, where this explorer talks about three instances of encounters that they had while exploring the living lands. This first section is referred to as trolls. I will never forget my encounter with the trolls of the living lands. I had just narrowly avoided being consumed by a giant plant, more on that later, and I was running as fast as I could to get away from it. I broke the crest of the hill and the valley below was wide, green, wet, and covered with low, thick, branched trees. Vines grew everywhere. Between the trees, across the tops of them, down to the ground. It is a mess of vine and green. Cautiously, I worked my way down towards the basin, keeping an eye out for anything suspicious. And it's a good thing I did, so I noticed not all the trees appeared to be trees. I froze, dropping to the ground in an effort to minimize my appearance. One of the trees moved, lumbering slowly away from the cluster. It's then that I realized that it was a troll stepping out from among the group of trees it had been resting against. With a few more steps, I would have walked right into their home. The camouflage these trolls exhibited far exceed any I had ever seen before, and I hope to return again in the future to observe them some more. Okay, so here we have this psychotic explorer who wants to go back to the home of trolls that could kill him to observe him more, you know, all in the name of science, I'm sure. But this is one of the types of creatures that we can run into here, these trolls that have adapted so well to the area that they're in that they're actually difficult to see. And there's a chance we might run into creatures like this within the game of Avowed. So if we get into any, like, lush, super viney areas, keep an eye out for some half-invisible trolls while you're out there. This next section is labeled insects. While I have never seen them, I have read reports of giant insects in the living lands. Centipedes, flies, mosquitoes, and hornets, all 10 times the size you would see them elsewhere. Imagine making a camp. You've just gotten everything set up, there's a nice fire going next to your shelter, something is gently simmering in the cooking pot. You sit down, finally feeling like you can relax after a trying day. You feel a tickling at your feet, insistent and prolonged. Reaching down to brush whatever it is away, your hand comes across in contact with something hard, long, and flexible winding its way around your boot. You look down to see a centipede the size of your arm casually making its way over your feet towards the far side of your camp. You would get out of that camp, wouldn't you? That's exactly what my friend did when he realized he had started his fire over a centipede nest. So this is absolutely terrifying. I mean, from a gameplay perspective, it makes sense to have, because now you can have insect creatures as enemies in the game, right? And who else do we have to have for cannon fodder, right, in this world? I know that there's Zorps that we've seen that are kind of like enemies in the gameplay trailer, but Zorps are a culture of their own. They actually, you know, they have society. They're not part of the Kith society. They're not, like, very civilized. They're kind of savage. But they do have a sort of nature and a society about them. But insects, oh man, we can go to town on insects, right? No one has to feel bad about that. So, you know, perhaps I shouldn't be saying that, so I'm going to get a letter from somebody for sure. Just be careful not to place your party camp over a centipede nest. So we can probably expect to run into some giant insects within Avowed. We've already seen giant spiders, so we know that one's there for sure. This next one is plants. So we've covered a little bit of, like, animal and beasts with the troll section. We've covered the giant insects with the insect section. And now we're going to be talking about plants. And this one is one that I think is going to be interesting for the game. And lest we forget, do not let your guard down around the plants. I had discovered a wonderful collection of giant flowers, and they were bright pink and grew in a circle around a central stalk. What an aroma. I lack the words to describe how delectable it was. Sweet, fruity, and light, with just a hint of something tangy. Looking closer, I saw some berries growing on the stalk in the center of the flowers. Well, I just have to have them, so I start pushing my way through the flowers. Then the vines growing around the base of the plant began to twitch, and the blooms turned toward me. It was at that moment I saw the blooms weren't actually flowers, but hinged jaws. I had been fooled by its camouflage. I quickly retreated, pushing my way back out, just in time. The blooms slammed shut. If I had been standing there, trying in vain to reach the berries, I wouldn't be writing this book today. So it sounds to me like we have carnivorous plants in the world of the living lands. So whether or not this is going to be included in the game, we don't really know. But this idea that there are plants in the living lands that want to eat you or kill you or whatever is not out of question. And so it won't be out of question for them to exist within Avowed. So I think to some degree we can possibly expect to see some of these things. I mean, this is all lore that the developers at Obsidian are aware of. And so they might be taking inspiration from some of these things for the creatures and enemies and encounters that they create for us. This is an example of some of the things that we can expect to see in the Living Lands. Now, what of this is going to be put into the game of Avowed? We don't really know. Obviously, they've created such a huge breadth of lore for the Living Lands that you could create anything within your imagination to exist. And the game can only be so big and they can only put so much into it. So, you know, temper your expectations with realism and all that kind of a thing. But this is the idea of the lore of what we're getting about the Living Lands themselves. So those are some creatures that might exist within the world of the Living Lands. But what about some locations, and what about some encounters that we might be able to have? Well, we already know of a few locations just from paying attention to what they've talked about in recent interviews with Carrie Patel and Gabe. We know, for instance, that there is a place called Dawnshore, which is the port town that we see in the June gameplay trailer from last year. And that should be in the Eastern Overlands, I think someone said, but I'm not sure where they're getting that information from. But that the town apparently is called Dawnshore. As well, if you've downloaded the fan kit off of avowed.obsidian.net, there is a few images in those file folders that you can look through. And the file names for some of these are called Galloway's Tusks. And we surmise that Galloway's Tusks is actually the name of a location within Avowed, one of the other biomes, I suppose. It's described as a jagged and rocky mountainous area at the base of an active volcano. Galloway being one of the gods of this world, the Lord of the Hunt in all of its forms. More on him if you want to. I do an episode on him way earlier on in this podcast's history. So those are two locations that exist within the Living Lands for sure. But there are a few other ones that might exist as well, some that might be tied to some ancient secrets. For example, there is an item in Pillars of Eternity, the White March Part 2 DLC, called Magefolk Skull. M-A-E-G-F-O-L-C Skull. Magefolk Skull. And a magefolk is a unique type of creature that exists within this world. It's essentially a creature that is directly created by the gods for the purpose of something. Like, they make them for a purpose. They're not a creature that existed out of evolution. They're not a creature that resulted as, you know, someone else's creation. These are creatures directly created by the gods for a purpose. They're called magefolk, and they can take all sorts of forms. And this item description that we read for this magefolk skull reads as follows. Magefolk, or the remains, have been found on most of the known continents of Eora. In the Living Lands, they are rumored to have built cities with great towers that reach beyond the clouds. This helm was recovered by an explorer who claimed to have plucked it from a burial chamber of a magefolk prince. Now, there's a whole bunch of lore in here that is implying a lot of stuff that we don't have time to go into. But what I will point out in regards to Living Lands is that apparently in the Living Lands somewhere, there is a city built by magefolk. Now, the interesting thing about that is that magefolk are built for a reason. Like, they're created by the gods for a particular reason. You know, something like defending an area that contains an ancient secret that this god isn't wanting to get out, or using them as minions on the world to do their bidding, etc., etc. There's a whole bunch of reasons. But why would a magefolk build a city? And why would they also have, you know, a monarchy where there's such a thing as a magefolk prince? We don't really know, right? Like, there's a lot of speculation that we can offer. And this is one of those mysteries and secrets that we might be talking about. So as we play Avowed, there's actually a chance we might run into a magefolk city and learn about some ancient secrets there. This isn't the only item in the game of Pillars of Eternity 1 or 2 that offers us some descriptions that are related to the Living Lands that we can learn some things from. Not all of them are nearly as mystical as the magefolk skull, but they're all interesting in their own. For example, there is a set of boots called Bile Stompers, and the description for these describe the boots as created in a small village within the Living Lands that is bordered by a toxic swamp and frequently overrun by venomous weeds. Which isn't much to say except for the fact that there is a toxic swamp with venomous weeds in them. Will we be playing in that biome in the game? Who knows? But this is a possibility. So everyone listening, get your imaginations ready, start thinking about Avowed and like what might be we playing in. Is like, well, there's a chance we might be playing in a toxic swamp. Another item that we get from the first Pillars of Eternity game is called Half-Mast, which is a poleaxe weapon, and the description for this reads as follows. A legendary Amawa soldier traveled the world, seeking adventures and treasures on every continent. In the Living Lands, he found the oldest tree in the world, a towering specimen that rose to the clouds and spread its branches over miles. Against the warnings of his crew, he took a branch, determined that it should be the mast of his ship. Month later, the ship was found broken and beached in northern Adir with no sign of the crew. Only the mast was intact, and it was whittled down and fitted with a blade. So, not much to say here, except that somewhere in the Living Lands is the largest tree, or at least the oldest tree on the entire world. So, somewhere in the Living Lands is the oldest tree in the world, which actually is interesting, because if you play the first Pillars of Eternity game, there is this location you go to called the Twin Elms. It's a native city of the area, and there are these trees there that are very ancient, and they are very closely tied to the culture that have found, you know, they're basically their capital city in that area. But trees, like everything in this world, contain essence, and essence is the stuff in this world that souls are made of. And so trees have essence, rocks have essence, you have essence, everything in the world of Eora has essence. And so the fact that this oldest tree is still here in the Living Lands, it would probably still be containing the essence that it's had since its creation, I suppose, or since it was made. And who knows what ancient secrets could be locked in that essence? Who knows as well what maybe some cultures near this giant tree have also made? Because there might be a druidic circle, for example, that have founded themselves at the base of this tree or under its canopy or something like that. So it's actually got a little bit more interest to it and speculation that we can offer than just some old tree in a giant island somewhere. Next, we have two weapons, drawn in spring and sheathed in autumn, but both of these offer the same description. I'll read from Drawn in Spring, which is a unique dagger in Pillars of Eternity 1. The description reads as follows. A legend of the Living Lands speaks of a marvelous and dangerous garden watched over by four guardians. Northern Wind, Southern Gale, Western Sun, and Eastern Moon is the names of the four guardians, to protect the garden from those who would disturb its wonders, and to protect hapless wanderers from the ravenous beasts and carnivorous plants within. There's more mentions of ravenous beasts and carnivorous plants. The guardians diverted travelers with their respective domains. Frigid and buffeting winds, glaring daylight, and the darkness of night. Three would stand alert each season while one guardian rested. It is said that Western Sun summoned Drawn in Spring, name of this unique dagger, each year after awakening from winter slumber. And so this offers a really interesting little tidbit about the Living Lands, because this is something that we could potentially run into within the game. It sounds like there is an area that there's this garden that exists within the Living Lands, and it's marvelous and dangerous, and it's guarded by these four guardians. And I could see this being like an optional dungeon kind of thing, or like if you can find it and you can overcome these massive enemies, then you can have the loot within, right? So this seems like something that could very well be put in the game, and it's an interesting idea. But moreover, this speaks to me about the secrets that exist within the Living Land. Where did this garden come from? Why is it being watched over by four guardians? Who appointed these four guardians? Are these mage folk that we were learned about from earlier on that we were talking about? Did the Living Lands themselves create them? If so, how? Like, there's so many questions that arrive of the inception of where this kind of thing can come from. And even if this isn't included in the game, I'm sure the developers at Obsidian have made interesting secrets to run into within the Living Lands as well. And I can't wait to see what kind of things they come up with. If they, you know, they come up with things like these in the past, I wonder what they're going to come up with for Avowed. Another example of something that I think is just mystical and really wondrous and fantastical about this world is actually comes from a companion adventure from Pillars of Eternity 1 called The Glass Tree. For those not familiar, in Pillars of Eternity 1, you were basically the owner of a stronghold called Cad Nua, and you could, as the owner and proprietor of that area, send out companions to do adventures, off-screen adventures. So you wouldn't do them, your companion would do them, and then they'd come back with loot that you would get to benefit from. It was just, you know, part of the role play of owning a stronghold and being able to do stuff with it. So you have this adventure called The Glass Tree, you send out a companion to go do that. You'll have the pitch and the conclusion and all the story within about what happened. And so here's the pitch for this adventure. Legends have spread about a hidden valley in the Living Lands where fantastic creatures are born straight out of the earth and new plants sprout and bloom every day. Some claim the place is sacred to the gods themselves, where they created all Kith and Wilder out of the primordial elements that churn just under the surface. Many of the tales describe a breathtaking, enormous glass tree with branches that reach across the valley and up to the clouds. They say at its base is guarded by a foreboding helmed warrior clad head to toe in glittering armor. So that's a pitch for this adventure. And you would select a companion that you have from your party, and you would say, okay, go on this adventure. And then off screen, they go and do the thing. Well, after so many behind-the-scenes turns, or days or weeks, whatever it is, in-game, they return, and then you're offered the conclusion to this mission. It took three separate expeditions from the south coast of the Living Lands for the companion to reach the fabled Valley of Glass. Though the legends have been exaggerated somewhat, the reality of the valley was breathtaking. It contained flora and fauna that had never been seen in any other part of Eora. great lumbering beasts and terrified winged creatures that flew so high they seemed to disappear into the clouds. And at the heart of it all was a great, quote-unquote, glass tree. When Companion examined it, it became obvious that it was not made of glass at all, but a fascinating clear wood bearing transparent sap along its great trunk and branches. Though the storied helmed warrior was nowhere to be found, the Companion did find a pair of glittering clear wooden gauntlets at the base of the tree. It's unclear who made them, if they were made from the tree's wood, and what would they have been left there, and why. With a route finally charted, other explorers began arriving in the Valley of Glass, but subsequent visitors reported that the flora and fauna had started to fade and disappear. Some speculate that the arrival of outsiders was causing the magic of the valley to retreat back into the depths of Eora. Isn't that just fantastic? Like, come on, that's such a cool story, that's such a cool area. Now, according to the lore of this place, it sounds like magic in the Valley of Glass is starting to retreat away, so mayhaps if we get to go to an area where this place would be within Avowed, it will probably just come across as mundane, and who knows what happened to the quote-unquote glass tree, which is actually just a transparent tree. Maybe we'll still get to see it, who knows, but maybe it will become opaque by the time we get there. Or maybe our character will be able to reinstitute the magic there somehow, with some unique connection that we have to the very land itself. I like this adventure. This one is actually really a cool one for me. I wanted to make a tabletop role-playing game adventure based off of this one. I like the lore behind this is might be an area where the gods themselves created all creatures. Of course, that's just stuff of legend, right? But it's really cool stuff to think of. And it's more flavor of stuff that might be within the Living Lands.
If you find your trail has run cold, come to me with whatever you have. There is much I may be able to do for you.
These next pieces of lore that we're going to talk about are just little tidbits. There's nothing huge to talk about here, just a couple things I want to sprinkle in the end before we close out the episode. First one comes from a item description. There's a unique pistol in Pillars of Eternity White March Part 1 DLC called Felthstroke. And the description for this item talks about adventurers from Eora going to the Living Lands to seek fame and fortune. And it tells the story of this one adventurer named Antonino, which I always want to read as Antonio, but it's Antonino. He was a thief that earned a reputation in a location called Via Jeppe, which is part of the Valian Republics. And as a thief, you don't want to have a reputation. So he kind of traveled the world and made his riches elsewhere, but he eventually went to the Living Lands, where he learned that the people there weren't like the plump rich people of Via Jeppe, where he came from, and so it was a lot harder to steal from. He ended up tricking a bunch of bandits when they were capturing him, and he stole this pistol as well as a bunch of other stuff from each other. He became successful and a feared robber of the area, and the subject of many campfire tales. And the only thing to say about this is that if you run into a character in Avowed named Antonino, this might be a head nod to this particular character. This next piece of information comes from an unmarked location within the Deadfire Archipelago, which is the setting for the second Pillars of Eternity game. So the island being unmarked means it doesn't have a name. It's just called Uncharted Island. It has the sand-swept ruins on it, for those familiar with the game. But anyways, the thing that's interesting is in the lowland sands area of this island, you can run into a camp, and this is set up by the Audraban Adventuring Company, which hail from the Living Lands. You can't really do much except fight or talk to them. Reading it on the Pillars of Eternity fandom article here, just the Audraban Adventuring Company that hail from the Living Lands. So there's a chance that in Avowed we might run into a adventuring company called Audraban Adventuring Company. The last little tidbit of information is for you Pillars of Eternity nerds out there. If you've played the first Pillars of Eternity game, then this cameo, or at least kind of like semi-cameo, might be of note to you. When you play Pillars of Eternity 1, in the very introduction to the game, you have a person who helps you along within the tutorial named Kalisha. She's a female fighter and a temporary companion within Pillars of Eternity. And one of the things that you learn about her is that her parents live in the Living Lands. So if at any point you're playing through Avowed and you're talking to or you overhear this couple talking about their kids, Kalisha or Ofra, over in Deerwood or something like that, those are probably the parents of Kalisha, and that's just going to be like a cameo or a head nod to those who've played the game. It might not be included, but just putting that out there for you Pillars of Eternity nerds out there, that's something to keep an ear out for. All right, and that's it for the lore. I just wanted to sprinkle those last ones in there before closing out the episode, and that's what we're going to do now. Normally I would do an section of the podcast now where I'd say, well, what does this all have to do with Avowed? But that's all we talked about today was Avowed related stuff. So We're just going to close out the episode like normal. I am going to begin by talking about a game that I am actually super hyped to talk about, even though it's 6 years old. Now, the game is called The Messenger, and it was developed by Sabotage Studio. And if that last part sounds familiar to you, it's because Sabotage Studio made Sea of Stars, a game that came out late last year. And Sea of Stars was an homage to old school JRPGs. It was like a love letter to Chrono Trigger, and they did a very good job, I might say, on that. And The Messenger is like an homage to games even earlier from that. I'm talking like 8-bit or 16-bit era, you know, original Nintendo Entertainment System or Sega Genesis, like those era of games. But now, if you're like me, you don't generally like those games, not because they're not good games and not because they don't have a place in gaming. I grew up playing those games and I kind of like went with the technology as I grew up. So I'm kind of a little more keen to play games that are taking advantage of that newer technology rather than playing games in the style of games I played as a kid. But every once in a while, it's nice to go back to that kind of stuff. And Sabotage Studio, pretty much this is what they do. In fact, I'm pretty sure their slogan for their company is about doing retro style games in a very modern way. And The Messenger is superbly done. If you can stomach playing old school style games or you like that kind of thing, I would highly recommend playing The Messenger. It is an absolute blast of a game. Sabotage Studio knocked this one out of the park. It also shares some connection to Sea of Stars. So if you really like Sea of Stars, there will be a little bit of a connection there. I think it's shared in the same world, and there's even some things that you can see in common with both games. But The Messenger is a blast. You're playing as a ninja who is running through the world, just, you know, slashing enemies, and you gain an ability really early on. You don't get a double jump in this game, but you get something that is better, in my opinion. Whenever you jump and you slash something in midair, you now given the ability to jump in midair after that slash. Thing is you can combine this multiple times, right? So you can slash an enemy in midair, use that to double jump, slash something else, use that to triple jump, and so on and so forth, as many times as you can combine it. And that makes the gameplay really fun and fluid, but also skill-based. Because of the modern controls, everything feels nice and modernized and fluid rather than a little bit janky. If you remember playing games back in the olden days, that era could be a little bit, I'll say blunt in its game mechanics. But this game is just, it plays so smoothly and it's a lot of fun. The writing is also on point and very hilarious. At one point, there's this shopkeeper that you interact with, and if you're in his shop, you can go over to his cabinet and you can start interacting with the cabinet, and he's like, don't touch that. But if you keep interacting with the cabinet, he will say new things like, hey, I told you don't touch that, hey, that's not for you, hey, get away from there, you know, that kind of thing. But at one point, if you continue to do it, he says, listen, you, if you touch that cabinet one more time, I'm gonna go on a philosophical diatribe and I'm gonna disable your ability to skip my dialogue boxes. Just, I love things like that. I love the meta humor and the self-awareness that it's a video game. And also, like, the commentary that they offer. Chatting with the shopkeeper is probably one of my favorite parts of the game. I'm in the latter half of the game right now, so I'm not going to spoil a lot that happens there, but just trust me when I say Sabotage Studio knows how to take a twist and a turn in a narrative. It's a very good game. So if you're into anything like that, I highly recommend checking it out. If you've been getting the free game of the week from Epic Games, you probably already have it in your library. So go check that out. If not, it's really not that expensive because A, it's 6 years old, and B, it's a retro style game. I think they tend to be a little bit more on the affordable side. But yeah, so that's what I've been playing. Absolute blast. Love it. Now, before we close out the episode, I told you I was going to give you a quick rationale as to why I started my Ko-fi account, which is the account that if you're interested in donating any money or something to this show for whatever reason, then that's an option there for you. If you aren't interested in hearing that, then feel free to jump off the episode now. I'm not going to hurt my feelings. Thanks for listening. I've been the host, Eric A. Gingerino. I will see you guys next time. But for those who want to just hear the rationale, because you've been listening for 3 years and I don't know, maybe you care what I think for some reason, or I don't know. But regardless, here's the rationale behind it. I won't go for very long. Essentially speaking, I've been talking with a couple of fans of the show who have asked, like, hey, do you have a Patreon? I would like to contribute to the show. And I've, like I said before, I've always just kind of been standoffish about that kind of thing. I don't know why. It made me feel, I'm not sure exactly what, but I didn't like it. You know, I felt like it was almost like it was a contractual thing. Like, I like making this podcast and I want to continue to do so, but I'm not doing it to earn any money. With one of the people I was talking to, they kind of said that they like to contribute to the shows that they enjoy, right? Like, they like to give a buck or two here or there to a show that they really enjoy. And they say they've been listening to my show for 3 years. And so they don't mind doing that, you know, a one-time thing. And I thought, you know, that's a good point. Like, there's something about giving gifts to people that for some individuals, not everybody, but for some individuals, that's an important thing to them. And I haven't even been giving people the option to do it, right? So I decided that, well, it's not going to hurt me, obviously, and it's not going to hurt anyone else if they want to. So I open up the count. Now, I really want to make this perfectly clear, and I don't know how to make it as more clear as I already have, but I am not imposing this in any way upon anyone listening to at all do this, okay? Like, if you're content to continue listening to this show, then by all means, continue listening to the show. Just take it as kind of a personal thing. If you've been listening to this show for a while and you have gained some value out of it and you would like to give back, even just, I think the minimum amount is $5, then by all means, go and do that. That is there for you to do if you so choose. The link is going to be in the description, but just in case I forget, it's ko-fi.com/worldofaora. So that's ko-fi.com/worldofaora. As a quick rundown of how this is going to go, the first $5 I make any month, I'm going to give to my wife to buy her coffee because she's my wife and she deserves it. As well, she also makes sure that I have the time and ability to do this show. And then after that, any money that comes in from that, I'm just going to put in a separate account and I'm going to use it for podcasting purposes. So if I need to get any software, or if I try to join a podcast network and there's a fee, or if I want to use something besides Spotify for podcasters, which is a great platform and I'm happy to continue using it, right? Like, but I'll use it for podcast related things. Unless someone gives me $5 and they specifically state that it has to be used for something else, like, I'm just happy to leave it where it is. You are able to, on Ko-fi, do a one-time donation or a continuous one. It's up to you. And again, I'm no pressure whatsoever. You do as the Lord wills you to do. Go with the Spirit, whatever it is you say to yourself. So yeah, that's that. I'm not going to talk about this on every episode. Maybe once a month, I'll just like put a quick reminder in that this exists, but I'm not going to talk about it at length every episode. I said I would give the rationale, so there it is. If you have any feedback you want on that, you think it's a good or bad idea, or you don't like that I even brought it up, send me an email, worldofaora@gmail.com. Or if you have any questions about the show, or about the lore of Avowed, or any comments that you have about Avowed, anything that you want to say or have a shout-out on the show, worldofaora@gmail.com. Feel free to follow me on Twitter as well, @worldofaora. As we get more and more news about Avowed, I'll be posting on Twitter, and I'm hoping to do like little lore tidbits every now and then. But anyways, that's it for today's episode. Thanks everyone for hanging in there and listening to us talk about the Living Lands, as well as just, I guess, me ranting about a game I've been playing. So thanks everyone. This has been fun. I'm your host, Eric, aka Gingerino, and I'll see you guys next time.